Settle down, everyone. Let's have some bloody quiet. I can't hear myself pigging thinking here, Barry yelled. Ernie shook his head. Barry was in one tonight. The rest of the band had better mind their P's and Q's. This was the first practice back after the contest at the weekend, and their unfortunate collision with a bouncing sheep. On Mondays, Susan and himself had to collect subs and the 100 Club, which brought in the primary income for the band. He liked Susan and was extremely pleased when she had been voted on the committee as secretary. Susan had been coming to every band meeting anyway, as her husband Tony played the trombone, her son Bob played percussion, and so did her best friend Laura. Ernie thought that the best committee members were the ones that weren't players, as they could give a lot more of their time, and it also left the players to just concentrate on what they did best, playing. Barry was shouting again, but it must have been in a light-hearted way, as everyone burst out laughing. It usually was directed at a particular baritone player named Stephen, who was continually putting his foot in it, or generally daydreaming about girls. Andy shouted something back from the horn section, and laughter erupted again. Andy was as sharp as a knife, but a little too cutting sometimes. Stephen was slow on the uptake sometimes, and it was a general joke in the band room on a daily basis. But when the chips were down, everyone looked after everyone else, and they were a family.
Susan looked up from her mountain of paperwork. Why is it that I'm always fully concentrating when something funny is said? And I miss it, she thought. She looked over at Bob, who was texting his friend, Adam, as usual. Sue gave him the angry eyes and mouthed the words, "Put it away," hoping Barry hadn't seen it. Tony looked towards her and mouthed, "What?" She gestured towards Bob and acted texting on a mobile with her fingers and shook her head. Tony was a legend. Longish hair, beard and cowboy boots. He wasn't your typical bander. Wherever Fryermere Band turned up, people would be looking for Tony in particular to have a beer with. She looked back down at her paperwork and started filling in competition forms again. From experience, she glanced back up at Bob, and he was texting again but not looking at her. She leant forward and poked Laura in the arm with the end of her pen.
Tell him to stop it, Laura. Laura moved forward and picked up a timpani stick, hitting Bob gently on the knee with it. Concentrate, she said. Sue wished she had more success with one word, but those hopes had long gone. Fryermere Band had lots to do tonight. With Armistice Day, concerts and Christmas not far away, there was plenty to practice. They warmed up with a hymn and then got down to work. There was a good mix of pieces tonight, slow, mournful pieces and hymns for Armistice plus Land of Hope and Glory, for a lunchtime concert they had after the service. They would also include some old favourites that people could sing along to, wartime songs, Lily Marlene, White Cliffs of Dover, and Roll Out the Barrel. These needed no practice, and they would get out the music out on the day, just for that day. They then went on to a few faster numbers to entertain at concerts. Light Walk, which was a Salvation Army number, and I've Got Rhythm. Sean, their drum kit player, was very fast and well beyond the standard of this band, but he enjoyed the laughs they had. It was local, and also his dad, Jeff, played here, which meant he got a lift. Bob played the timpani super loud to the next one, a version of Bohemian Rhapsody, and that was how Barry liked it. Bob was the little star in the making, and Barry gave him lots to do. He would often move from timpani to xylophone to glockenspiel in about 12 bars. And as time went on, with the music Barry picked, he was doing it more often than not. Ernie put the kettle on in the back room where Freddie, the music librarian, was housed. This was cup of tea number 3 for the committee tonight. Usually on tea number 3, the biscuit barrel was passed around too. Susan washed the cups, dried them, and then sat back down. Bob made her a gesture towards her that meant he wanted her to make him hot black currant. Kids, who would have them? The band continued to play on. Barry, the musical director, was a master of his craft. He had a rich pedigree of success with his previous bands, and Fry and Mick were lucky to have him. They hoped he would stay until he retired, which was a long time, as they had never won so many competitions or had risen through the banding sections so quickly. Brass bands play in sections, like football leagues. Free and Mary were in the fourth when Barry had taken them on, but now were in the second after winning again and again at their area contest at Blackpool each spring. They played Goldcrest, the first part of Little Sweet, for brass and concert prelude. They started on Fingal's Cave. Finally, they practiced a few Christmas numbers. In general, like the sing-alongs on Armistice Day, they play Christmas carols from their books at the concert and on outside caroling jobs without practice. But they did the greatest and largest Christmas concert in the village, always at the Civic Centre. This was a joint concert with the local primary school. The music teacher there would have the children practice lots of new Christmas-based songs and carols from about October onwards. She would then send the music to Fry and Mair Band so they could play along with the choir. Now, most people would think that a brass band could drown out a school choir, but not this choir. 3/4 of all pupils were members of the choir. So it was a marvellous musical night. Solo items from both camps and many joint items, plus carols for the audience to sing along to. At 10 o'clock, Barry stopped. "We'll call it a night there, folks. Ernie wants a word, though." Ernie walked to the front of the band. He waited a short while until there was quiet. He had noticed he managed to achieve this quicker by sighing very loudly while checking his small piece of paper full of notes. Just a bit of housekeeping, everyone, and news. Could everyone bring their subs up to date, if possible? If anyone is going to the club, could you use the small room, as they have got a cricket function going on in the big one? Also, we have had a 10-piece band job booked for this weekend. Sorry to land it on you like that. Everyone groaned. They like plenty of notice for band jobs. Few people said, "Oh, Ernie," and, "Well, I can't do it." When the noise had calmed down a bit, Ernie started with the list. "All right, who's going on the top seat?" "What night is it at the weekend, Ernie?" asked one of the cornet players, Morris. "Saturday night. Bonfire night it is. 8 while 10. I'll sweeten the pot as well for you all, and say he is paying us big bucks and is throwing in a buffet for the players."
"And beer?" Morris asks.
"I was told wine and plenty of it. The person who has booked it has a vineyard somewhere abroad," Ernie replied.
"Count me in," said Morris.
"All right, Sophie."
Sophie was the principal cornet and would automatically have the top chair if she wanted to do the concert. Morris was her bumper up, her number two. "No, Ernie, I've already got tickets for a big bonfire and a few of the others are coming as well."
"I know what you mean. I'm supposed to be taking the grandkids to one as their mum is working that night at the hospital."
"You'll be on the top chair then, Morris. Anyone else before I have to tell this guy that I can't do it?"
"I'll go," a few people said. The conversation was getting quite loud now, and the promise of free food, and especially free wine, had changed a lot of the players' minds.
Ernie started to write the names down. "Okay, I've got 2 cornets, a youth, a bass, a barry, a trom. But what about persecution?" This term for percussion had started when Barry had arrived and stuck.
"I'll do it," Woody said, "as long as I can get leathered, so I'll need a lift there and back."
"I'll give you a lift, Woody," said Michael Thompson. "I might as well go and do the committee stuff, pick up the cheque and the likes, if our Stephen is going on Barry anyway."
Ernie wrote Woody next to percussion and Michael's name at the bottom of the list. "Woody, if you are getting leathered, as you say, can you make sure you don't start until after you have played?" He looked over his glasses to Woody, who briefly nodded his head while fiddling with his stick bag.
"Right, Tenorhorn. Andy?"
"I'm not doing it, Ernie. I always do it. Someone hasn't taken their turn on the 10-piece all year."
"I don't want to do it either," said Vicky. What Andy says is right, Vicky. He does it every time. And you can't expect Pat to do it all either. She's 70.
Thanks, Ernie, Pat said sarcastically. Vicky, you can just do it. You aren't behind the door at the Christmas party when you have your free meal and Malibu all night. Pat winked at the rest of band. She was a feisty old bird.
Fine, Vicky snapped. I just need another cornet.
Liz will do it, Andy volunteers.
I thought we were going out, Andy. No, we can't afford it this week. We would only be stopping in watching rubbish.
By rubbish, you mean all the stuff I like? Well, I'm recording it, and I'll watch it when I get in.
Not if Match of the Day is on, you won't, Andy replied.
Liz sighed. What is this concert anyway, Ernie? What are we playing?
From what I can gather, you can play what you like. It's a housewarming party combined with a bonfire party. There's you, a disco, food and fireworks. Should be a good night. A lot of bigwigs have been invited and people local to the house.
Where is it? She asked.
Well, for me, that's the exciting bit. It's at the old Blackfriars Grange on the hill.